This week, we've got some great news about a great brother who is now worshipful master. We've also got illustrious Brother Harrison, who stops by for a new Masonic Minute, the movie Peggy Sue, Kathleen Turner, Nicolas Cage, and the Freemasons. We'll wrap it up with a piece that explores the idea of the Elohim. What is it? Or they? Or him? We'll read a piece from the Masonic Philosophical Society exploring this idea in the first of a two-part article read. Finally, we'll draw a tarot card and discuss its implications on revelation, change, and necessary destruction. Soul growth is imminent. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 524. First things first, sorry we're a day late, but we're not a buck short. Not really, anyway. I was off in Virginia hanging out with Brother Joe Martinez, now worshipful Brother Joe Martinez of Manassa Lodge number 182. I flew out there midweek and totally forgot to record and schedule the episode to come out on Sunday. So here I am, recording this late and getting it out to you so that you have some great education this week. Now, again, in the news, that's what happened this week. That's really amazing. Brother Joe Martinez has transitioned to worshipful Brother Joe Martinez, Manassa Lodge 182. So congrats to Brother Joe Martinez for his ascent to the East, and a huge congrats out to all of those officers of Manassa Lodge who I know Joe has in his corner and who will make this year one for the books. Well, I guess every meeting of every lodge is in the books, quote unquote, so not in that way, but certainly a year to remember. I gotta tell you that Brother Joe Martinez's wife, Barb, did such a fantastic job with the decor and throwing what was just really an amazing installation party. Now I need to go ahead and thank our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners to the WCY podcast. Without you, this show cannot happen, so thank you so much for your financial support. If you're interested in how you can help support the WCY podcast, Masonic education for anyone interested in the quote-unquote royal art, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on support the show. There's also a few items in the shop where we've put together some unique things, most of which are crafted by myself, actually, so if something there is interesting to you, please go ahead and purchase it. All the proceeds go right back into the production of this show. Speaking of legacy partners, one of our legacy partners has decided to move in a certain direction with a particular episode that we're going to be scheduling soon. We're going to have an exclusive interview with an author who has not really done an interview before about a work which is very important, and the book is fantastic. Who is it and what is the book? Well, I can't tell you just yet. We want to make sure we solidify everything and we get it all squared away. The brother will also be in the podcast with us doing this interview, so I'm really excited about it. I'm just about ready to get holiday cards out. I don't know if all of you do that. I really do try to get as many holiday cards out to as many people as possible. I think about this time of year, people really do think about the nostalgia of this kind of giving and thoughtful time of year, and I want all the people in my life, if I could, I just want all the people in my life to know that I think about them all year long, but in particular also at this time of year. And that's kind of that time of year of giving and of thinking of other people and letting them know that you're thinking of them. And so to that end, I try to write a card to everybody I know. And every year I write a few more cards. I think I'm up to, 350 cards I send out every year. And yeah, I mean, it's not cheap to do that, but I really feel like that small gift of a postage stamp and a card sometimes really makes the difference to let people know that you're thinking about them. I hope you all write a card to somebody you love this year that you haven't talked to in a while. If you're somebody who's been a supporter of the WCY podcast, rest assured there's a card coming to you too. and I really want you to know how much I appreciate you. As far as the presentations that I'm doing coming up, you know, the last one of this year, actually, I'll be doing one on the 27th for Terre Haute Lodge in Terre Haute, Indiana, Lodge number 19. And I'll be doing a talk, I think it's going to be the Colonial Freemasonry talk, so the Masonic Pub Crawl, Freemasonry in America, and its Colonial Tavern Beginnings. That's a really fun presentation, and I think a lot of people really enjoy it. It has a really feel-good message, and I hope those who have caught it in the past feel the same. So how about some education this week? There's actually a three-part series of articles that I want to read for you. I think I'll read part one this week, and next week we'll read parts two and three. But we've also, as you heard at the top of the show, got a great Masonic Minute. So, first and foremost, let's check out this Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison.
In the 1986 movie Peggy Sue Got Married, Kathleen Turner plays an adult who attends her high school reunion, suffers from a major case of the vapors, and is transported back in time. She lands back in 1960 when she was a high school senior with a chance to start anew, correct old mistakes, and perhaps make a few new ones. During the ensuing doo-wop-laced couple of hours, Peggy Sue reassesses her early relationship with her boyfriend, become ex-husband Charlie, played by Nicolas Cage. She forms a friendship with an ostracized high school geek and plants his turbocharged brain with coming attractions like the moon landing and gizmos such as microwave ovens, pocket calculators, and digital watches he could invent to become rich and famous. Then, as an inspired young inventor herself, she manufactures the world's first pair of pantyhose. After her requisite fling with a laconic motorcycle-riding rebel with a cause poet, she runs off to visit her time-warp resurrected grandparents. There, she comes clean about her time-traveling escapade.
Grandma, Grandpa, I want to tell you something. Now, I know you're going to think I'm crazy, but please believe me. Somehow, I've traveled back in time from my late 30s when I married with two children. And I miss my kids and I want to go back.
The understanding Gram and Gramps believe her. So what's a gal to do in order to time hop back to the future without a DeLorean? I'm glad you asked. Grandpa has the solution. He'll hustle her off to his lodge, where they have just the ceremony for that. They arrive at the lodge building, which on the outside is a conical structure resembling a Crazy Cup ice cream stand. But on the inside, it is almost certainly a genuine Masonic lodge, replete with dozens of grayscale portraits of real-life past masters, just like the ones in your lodge. The wide-eyed Peggy Sue has a question for Granddad.
What does Grandma think you do at these meetings?
Stag parties and poker games, quips Gramps. Well, there goes one of our secrets. The brothers are suited in royal purple robes with gold-colored fringe and embroidery. Accessories include a cornucopia of hats. What appear to be more lower-ranking brothers wear black, drooping Renaissance hats, while others have elaborate royal purple pyramid-shaped headgear. Gramps, probably being something like a past poobah, has a purple rectangular block-shaped headpiece with what appear to be four doorknobs at the top corners. Peggy Sue gasps,
Grandpa, Do you have to wear that hat?
Gramps adjusts the hat, moving it into the perfect position. Wouldn't be a lodge without hats, he says. Another secret revealed. Inside the lodge room, the head muckety-muck sits in a familiar setting behind a podium elevated to a level 3 steps up. Opposite him, we see the customary sight of 2 columns. Not surprisingly, an altar stands in the center of the room. A brother informs Peggy Sue the lodge was founded by a time traveler, as was my own lodge, but I digress. The ceremony begins with the resident musician playing Beautiful Dreamer on a mandolin. A brother steps to the altar, breaks an egg into a chalice, and completes the concoction with an elixir of red goop. He follows this with the sign of the degree, which is thus made. The hands are crossed, palm inward in front of the face, with the thumbs touching the nose. The hands are then flapped vigorously, with the brother staring upward, symbolic of a prospective time traveler flying off to a new epoch. The gesture draws a snicker from Peggy Sue, a reaction which we may all have seen from our wives during open ceremonies. 3 raps from the symbolic East brings the already standing brothers to order, as the leader enjoins the Lord of the Universe, Ruler of Light, King of the Sun, to guide Peggy Sue, clad in a gold robe, forward in time. Peggy Sue has doubts.
This is not going to work.
Grandpa reassures her. Chaos reigns as the scene fills with thunder and lightning. The lodge goes dark. Peggy Sue disappears, and when the light returns, a brother yells, "Let's play cards." Any well-educated Mason would recognize the faults in this particular rendition of our time travel ceremony, which is so secret, it's something I cannot discuss in this public forum. Of course, due to those faults, it did not work. Instead, when the lodge was dark, Charlie, remember Charlie? Swept in, grabbed Peggy Sue, and whisked her away into the stormy night. I suppose this could morph into a discussion of how the outside world views Freemasonry. But we'll have that analysis another time. Anyway, Charlie drags Peggy into a greenhouse where they are out of the rain, tells her he's a changed guy, and begs her to marry him. Peggy Sue is furious.
What the hell do you think you're doing? I have to go back to the lodge. My grandfather's in there, and you were never there for me and the children, so I'm not crazy enough to marry you twice.
Charlie convinces her things will be different, and we fade back to 1986 as Charlie wonders, what children? The adventure culminates with Peggy Sue waking up from her fainting spell, securely back to the future. There, Peggy and her ex-husband reconcile.
Aww.
This leaves the door open for Charlie, also known as Nicolas Cage, also known as Benjamin Franklin Gates, to go off on his own quest, where he discovers the Freemasons are the stewards of a great national treasure. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison.
And Carolyn Harrison.
With the Masonic Minute.
Oh, well, I love you, Gavis. I love you, Peggy Sue.
All right, how about that bit of awesome kind of Hollywood Masonic, mystique, and cinema magic. Thank you so much to illustrious brother Steve Harrison and, of course, his amazing and talented wife Carolyn for their work here in this particular installment of the Masonic Minute. I love how they went back and forth with the parts. Carolyn, wonderful job with the readings. Just fantastic. What do you guys think? Is there a Masonic lesson to be learned about time travel and not changing the future and just getting a second chance or insights? It makes you think. Time is one of the things that we contemplate most often in the fraternity, not just about our time left here on Earth, but our time and what we do with it. If this interests you, I hope that you check out Brother Harrison's YouTube channel, as well as our own. You can head on over to our channel on YouTube and like and subscribe to our videos, which come out, again, every single week. We are going to be dark for 2 weeks at the end of every year, just for the holiday and New Year's. But other than that, we're out every single week. And every other week, illustrious Brother Harrison has a cool video clip that goes right along with his Masonic Minute segments. These are wonderful additions to any lodge night. Turn one on for education. And what makes it is not just listening to this as education, but listening to it and then discussing it with your lodge. It is fantastic. All right, so I misspoke, actually. There's actually only two parts to this series of articles. The first one was published July 22nd of 2019, and the second part was published fairly recently. The title is called The Elohim, Part 1, The Sons of God. And what is interesting about this is we may find some similarities or correlations to some of what we read last week when we talked about who Enoch was. This is dealing with very ancient Hebraic ideas. So let's check out this article. The Elohim Part 1, The Sons of God. The term Elohim has been alternately identified as a name of God, angels, demons, or other types of supernatural beings. It's been associated with the Shining Ones, the Anunnaki, Nephilim, and the Watchers. So, what is more likely the case, and what are the implications for humanity? The word Elohim is usually thought of as a name for God in the Hebrew Bible, appearing over 2,500 times in that text. The context in which the word is used makes that assertion less clear. However, for in some instances, Elohim appears to refer to multiple gods. A look into the word's origins may help determine its meaning. The word's etymology often sheds some light on its original meaning, but in this case, Elohim's roots are somewhat obscure. The online etymology dictionary indicates the word as a plural of Eloh, which means God. The entry also states the word is of unknown etymology and may be an augmentation of El, also meaning God. Examining the word's Hebrew spelling may also provide some indication of its root, read from right to left as Aleph, Lamed, He, Yod, Mem. Hebrew characters when forming a word often tell a story, as each character has its own set of meanings. In this case, the Hebrew word Elohim could be interpreted in two ways. The first interpretation, the first character, Aleph, can be read as the existence of God's hidden mysteries and their revelation to certain men. Continuing on, there are those who teach men God's mysteries, who are the same individuals, examples being the Elohim, who goad men into what he needs to learn, encouraging man's action forward. As those men learn God's mysteries, his knowledge comes into those men's hearts. Spirit is breathed into him. As man becomes more spiritual, they become humbler, and they become the Word over time. Through this learning, one result is that wisdom springs forth from your speech. A second possible interpretation stems from the viewpoint of the Elohim as intermediaries or emissaries of God. The Vav, or Vev, represents the link the Elohim represent between God and man, heaven and earth. The Elohim also enable the spiritual to be made actual in the physical world. They are also the connection between the physical and the spiritual. From the prior, the Elohim provide opportunities for man to choose to open the door and access God directly. Research indicates some possible associations with the second interpretation, but the connections are tenuous at best. The Sumerians, circa 4,500 to 1,900 BCE, believed in a divine race of beings named the Anunnaki. Based on imprecise translations of a small subset of some 22,000 hieroglyphic tablets, the interpretations vary from source to source. Some identify the Anunnaki as a pantheon of high-level gods, while others relegate them to much lower status, having been banished to the underworld by younger and stronger gods. From the Oxford Companion to World Mythology, the Anunnaki, quote, are the Sumerian deities of the old primordial line. They are chthonic, or in or under or beneath the earth, deities of fertility, associated eventually with the underworld, where they became judges, end quote. Over the question of life and death, in some sources the Anunnaki are a diffuse set of natural gods associated with various aspects found throughout nature, while others indicate a specific number of Anunnaki, with specific roles, even kings. One unique line of thought comes from Zachariah Sitchin in his 1972 book, The Twelfth Planet. In that book, Sitchin proposes that the Anunnaki are of an alien origin and used genetic engineering to create man. In the Bible, it directly translates as sons of God and are associated with the Anunnaki in Genesis 6:4. After that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. Other potential variations include the Shining Ones, referenced in the Hidden Doctrine authored by Helena Blavatsky. Quote, behold him lifting the veil and unfurling it from east to west. He shuts out the above and leaves the below, to be seen as the great illusion. He marks the places for the Shining Ones and turns the upper into a shoreless sea of fire. Part 1, Cosmic Evolution, Stanza 3. And also, quote, these are the threefold, the fourfold downward, and the mind-born sons of the First Lord, the Shining Seven. Stanza 7. To be continued. Well, there you have this initial part, the Elohim. Who are these deities? Is it truly a multiple manifestation of God? Is it God but manifested as different attributes, or something else entirely, as Zachariah Sitchin has pointed out? Of course, you know, could just be aliens, right, from ancient aliens, good old Giorgio Tsoukalos. But who knows? We might never know, but we will read the second part of this next week. Before we close out this week, let's see what the tarot has in store for us. If you've been following along the last few weeks, we've been pulling a single tarot card and discussing what it could mean for us and our psychology. Not as divinatory, we're not fortune-telling, we're not conjuring, we're not telling the future. We're looking at the meaning of a card and thinking about how it could relate to our own lives. So this week, we've got a new deck. This week I'll be using Patricio Diaz Silva's Masonic Tarot. We'll be using the complete tarot deck, 78 cards, all major and minor arcana. The cards vary much across the spectrum. All have very similar meanings from card to card, although different systems often will have specific rules for types of cards that may be interpreted by the creator of the deck in a certain way. For instance, the Smith-Waite deck has meanings for cards when they're drawn upright or upside down. This is what Arthur Edward Waite does. Paul Foster Case, for instance, only has a meaning for the card if it's drawn up or down. It matters not, right? However, in this deck, we will go ahead and we'll talk about both if it's applicable. I'm going to go ahead and get a little shuffle here. Again, as I've said in the past, no specific number of shuffles that I do. I do tend to split the deck in half, shuffle half of it, then shuffle the other half, then split those decks and shuffle those separately as well, just to get a good mix. So I'll draw one card right off the top, and we get key number 16, the Tower. Now, the Tower is one of my favorite cards. You know, we have received many major arcana over these last few weeks, and I promise I'm not drawing those on purpose. This is strictly just by chance. So, in this particular tarot card deck, let's see what Patricio Diaz Silva says about the Tower before we go into kind of a more objective look. He says, undeniably tragic, this is a card that presages destruction, death, war, bankruptcy, earthquake, fire. It is a sudden event that changes everything, a tragedy, the end of a dream or a project. The Tower predicts problems, force the person to rethink life in various aspects and to begin anew on more solid foundations. It is the challenge to rise again, assuming that life will never be the same. In most tarot decks, the Tower is being affected by external force, which symbolizes the destruction comes from causes not subject to the nature of the person it affects. Rather, it shows the effects of karmic causes or metaphysical order, of which the actor could hardly have understanding or know to be cautious. In the card, we see a circular tower with various levels has been destroyed by an impact of lightning discharges. Stone blocks are popping off of the top of the tower. Beside these blocks, projected through the air, are symbolic tools used in the rituals of brotherhood. The worshipful master's mallet, the trowel, square, rule, level, and plumb, the two columns of the temple, have been thrown down. There are also fragments of the chain of fraternal union representing the disassociation of brotherhood. The tower on its facade shows a porch preceded by three steps and within which fire is seen. Above the first level, corresponding to the chamber of apprentices, there is a sequence of three windows. At the second level of fellows, five windows are observed, and at the third, where the masters meet, seven windows are displayed. In the latter, it is where the fire causes the most damage. This detail means that the greatest catastrophe occurs when the beam of destruction affects the head of the tower and not the base. Arcane classifications: male, knight, element, fire, vital projection, destruction, marital force. Quite interesting. I will say that this is a meaning of the card that I personally would not subscribe to. It sounds to me as if somebody has, not to discredit the person who wrote this, Patricio Diaz Silva, I would just say that the interesting tarot deck that this is has a lot of explained symbolism for what is represented in the card rather than the hidden meaning of the card. For instance, the more objective way to look at the Tower card is really a revelation on your part. Perhaps the end of something as you move into something greater. Do you see the positivity in this version is what we need to focus on. So with key number 16, we did draw it upright. So let's talk a little bit about what that means more objectively and what it could mean for you as a person. It does mean sudden change, upheaval, chaos, revelation, and what I would think for many of you might be applicable is an awakening or a revelation. The tower really does show a tower that's perched on the top of a rocky mountain, and lightning is hitting the top, and there's usually a male and a female falling from it to show the indiscriminate nature of what's happening. The lightning that's striking the tower is like energy or insight that leads to a breakthrough or a revelation for you. So when this card appears in a tarot reading, it's telling you that something is going to change and it's going to take you by surprise. Now, of course, it could be something negative like a divorce or a financial failure, or it could represent health problems. But honestly, tarot is usually right all the time because it is directly linked to what you're already thinking about subconsciously. So if you get the Tower card, and maybe you're somebody who is a little bit more on the glass half empty side, you might be thinking more about financial stuff, or maybe you've only got a few bucks in your bank account and this card comes up and you're like, oh no, but what maybe this means instead, right, is maybe you're going to get a raise, or an opportunity is going to hit you, or you're going to get a massive strike of lightning in the form of a great new idea to change your financial status. Something along those lines. But the best way forward when thinking about this card is really that you kind of have to let this thing self-destruct so that we can rebuild and refocus. It's like a forest fire. They are necessary. We must have destruction so that we can rebuild. It allows for new growth and for your soul to evolve. Again, the tower, it isn't always associated with pain and turmoil. This card could really represent a new awakening for you, a new path, a new way of thinking. And that's really important. Have you recently been thinking about, it could be something as practical as switching political parties. Maybe something has become an epiphany to you and you said, oh, I'm going to go to this party now. Or maybe you give up political parties and now you are an independent. Or maybe you've had a thought or a change in faith and you are more interested in a new faith, right? That you take a new spiritual following. Or perhaps it's as simple as realizing that you're really great at sales and you should take that sales job. What is the practicality of this? You know, what does it do for you? Think about those things that might suddenly come to you in a flash that offer you opportunity. And sometimes opportunity comes at the cost of a sort of destruction of what was before. For our Craftsman Plus, I would love to hear about positive revelations or lightning strikes that have rocked your world in the past that could relate to the Tower card. Now that's it for this week. I hope to read all of your responses in the Craftsman Plus Facebook group. My thanks once again goes out to our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners for all of their support over the years. We've been doing this show over 10 years now, and it's all thanks to you. So one huge thanks every week goes out to you. Keep an eye out in the mail for your cards, and also send a card to someone. It's a really positive thing. Write out a holiday or end of the year, New Year's card or something. Maybe even just a letter if you don't practice anything in particular. And just tell somebody you're thinking about them. Wish them luck in the new year. Connect with them in actual writing. And if your handwriting is terrible, they'll understand. It's okay. Write it anyway. Use your hand to put the ink on paper. Know that they touched that paper, that you took some real time to make that happen. And if you just can't write or anything like that, then type it up or use speech to text. They'll appreciate it, I promise you. With that, I will talk to you all next week. And then we've only got one show after that. Then we'll be off for 2 weeks. So we'll talk to you all next week. And until then, stay on the level for Whence Came You. I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.